It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
There is a special statute that was really designed specially for people in same-sex couples that allows an individual to name the person that they want to have handle things, and it has to be signed and notarized by the person giving that authorization and also by the person accepting the responsibility and provided to the funeral home within 48 hours after death. It's a really important statute because so many times in that situation there can be a disconnect between the family and the partner, and this really clarifies what the person wants and makes sure their wishes are followed.
Private attorney Phoebe Hall takes the fear and mystery out of probate and the administration of estates. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about how payday lenders could be replaced by the U.S. Postal Service under a proposal from Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 228, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. The U.S. Postal Service could spare the most economically vulnerable Americans from dealing with predatory financial companies under a proposal endorsed by Senator Elizabeth Warren. The Postal Service could partner with banks to make a critical difference for millions of Americans who don't have basic banking services because there are almost no banks or bank branches in their neighborhoods. Warren's plan is based on a report from the Postal Service's Inspector General that proposed using the agency's extensive physical infrastructure to extend basics like debit cards and small-dollar loans to the same communities that the banking industry has generally ignored. The report found that 68 million Americans don't have bank accounts and spent $89 billion in 2012 on interest and fees for the kinds of basic financial services that the Postal Service could begin offering. The average unbanked household spent more than $2,400, or about 10% of its income, just to access its own money through things like check cashing and payday lending stores. The Postal Service would generate savings for those families and revenue for itself by stepping in to replace those non-bank financial services companies. Payday lenders with triple-digit interest rates now face a crackdown from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But while this is a good thing for consumers, it doesn't reduce the demand for those financial services. The Postal Service could slide into that space and meet that need without preying upon those communities. America's post offices are an ideal physical infrastructure for furnishing these services to communities currently neglected by banks. Roughly 6 in 10 post offices nationwide are in bank deserts, zip codes with either one or zero bank branches. Doing business in those communities in a more ethical fashion would still be profitable enough to inject about $9 billion into the struggling Postal Service, which is dealing with a fiscal crisis largely manufactured by Congress. The agency gets no taxpayer money for its operations, but still is under the authority of Congress, which has imposed arbitrary financial requirements and service constraints that have the Postal Service on the verge of bankruptcy. The Postal Service is legally obligated to hold assets in its pension funds that cover the next 75 years of projected pension costs, a unique and crippling requirement that Congress refuses to lift, despite evidence that it is almost solely responsible for the agency's financial woes. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. Probate, the process through which a will is proved valid or invalid after death, may be a confusing process. Probate also includes the filing of necessary paperwork in the proper county office. Phoebe Hall, an elder law attorney with Hall & Hall in Midlothian, Virginia, took time out from her busy schedule to help take the fear and mystery out of probate and the administration of estates. Here is the first part of her two-part interview. We're here at the law offices of Hall & Hall in Midlothian, Virginia, and we are speaking with Phoebe Hall, and we will be talking with her today about the administration of decedents' estates. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Would you tell our listening audience, first of all, when someone passes on, who takes care of the funeral?
Normally what happens is that the funeral is taken care of by the closest family members. So usually it's going to be someone's spouse or their children. And even if the will directs some things about the funeral, oftentimes people have not looked at the will. And so a person's buried before anyone even looks at that. So, another thing that's important to know is that there is a special statute that was really designed specially for people in same-sex couples that allows an individual to name the person that they want to have handle things, and it has to be signed and notarized by the person giving that authorization and also by the person accepting the responsibility and provided to the funeral home within 48 hours after death. It's a really important statute because so many times in that situation, there can be a disconnect between the family and the partner, and this really clarifies what the person wants and makes sure their wishes are followed.
It sounds like an excellent statute. Now, you mentioned that the funeral oftentimes will take place before the will is even found, much less people have had a chance to read it. So who generally pays for the funeral?
You know, this is one of the hardest things for people because they want to make sure that their loved one has a proper funeral, but they're worried about whether they can provide the funds or whether they'll get reimbursed. And what happens is that the funeral home will require somebody to either sign for or pay for the funeral. It means people need to be very careful because if the estate is insolvent, they may not be able to get reimbursed or not fully reimbursed because only $3,500 of the funeral expenses are a priority. And the other thing is that the funeral expenses have to be reasonable.
And $3,500 does not go very far toward a funeral. I mean, even the least expensive funeral is probably going to cost at least two, three, four times that much.
But, you know, the interesting thing we're seeing so much in our practice is that many people are choosing to be cremated. And cremation is so much less expensive and something that a lot of people prefer.
So who should be told about the fact of death?
In terms of talking with people, it's really the job of the family rather than the executor to notify people. And, you know, it's just a common sense thing. You want to notify all the people that care about the person who died, the relatives, the close friends. And, of course, an obituary will notify people who are a little more distant.
And what about government agencies and financial institutions and such? Can you give us a brief list of those type of agencies that perhaps ought to be notified?
Of course, the first thing most people will notify is Social Security Administration. And any agency that a person has financial dealings with should be notified. The best thing to do is kind of look at the person's tax returns, look at their bank statements, and you'll see where monies may be coming in from government agencies and be able to identify things that way. Also, of course, there needs to be a notification to IRS and to the state government.
Okay, so where is the will likely to be found, assuming that there is one?
Ideally, the will will be in a safe deposit box or in a fireproof safe. The reality, however, is that many people have put them in a drawer or in a file cabinet, and they haven't even talked with their proposed executor about where the will is. So the job of finding the will is sometimes a bit difficult.
Now, what if the will is in a safe deposit at a bank? I mean, presumably the decedent was the one who had the key and had sole access to the deposit. Is there a way for the next of kin to look in the safe deposit box?
There is. And, you know, people often have questions about this because in some states I think it's a lot harder than it is in Virginia. What we always recommend to people when we write their wills is that they put someone else's name on the safe deposit box to make it easier in case of even disability. They keep the key and just let the person know how they could find the key if it was needed. But in case of death, if there is no authorized person, the executor can go to the bank and in the presence of a bank person can get access to the safe deposit box solely for the purpose of getting the will to be probated.
Well, what happens if the will can't be found?
If the will can't be found, generally it's going to be presumed that the will was revoked. And a person who has a copy of it and believes that they can prove that it really wasn't revoked will have to go to court and try to prove the lost will. It is a felony for someone to destroy or to not produce a will that they have, so that gives an extra little precaution against that kind of thing happening.
And am I correct that in Virginia, the original of the will, not a copy, but the original is what has to be produced and admitted for probate. Is that correct?
That's right, unless you have a court order that finds that the lost will can be probated.
Now, does the will have to be read to the family?
Well, this is modern times. All of us have seen the TV programs where there's this very formal proceeding in front of a lawyer and the family is all waiting with bated breath to know what the will say. In reality, most of the time, someone in the family has probably gone with the person when they made the will and may know what it says. Copies may have been given to family members.
So it's not necessary.
It's not necessary. And with blended families, we're seeing more and more dissension over wills, and often the people who are named in the will don't choose to notify anyone else prior to probate about the will.
So you just mentioned probate. Tell us in brief, what is probate?
Probate is simply the way that a will is filed in the clerk's office of the circuit court and the way that the probate process is made formal.
So take us through that process step by step. How is a will actually probated?
Okay, so what happens is that when someone dies, the person who's going to serve as the executor or the administrator, if there is no will, makes an appointment with the clerk of the circuit court in which the person died. They take with them the will, a death certificate or a copy of the obituary, a check to pay filing fees, and then there's some forms that they need to fill out, and those forms can be obtained from the clerk of court or can be obtained online.
And what are those forms? What specifically needs to be filled out, at least at a minimum?
Okay, those forms are basically the information that the clerk's going to need to understand who are the people involved and what's the property involved. So you'll have a probate information form, a memorandum of facts, a probate tax return, and a list of heirs or a real estate affidavit. Also, if you have a situation where the person named as the executor doesn't want to serve, then you need a letter from that person, and it's ideal if it's been notarized.
Okay, so you mentioned at least three forms there. The first one was the memorandum of facts. What facts are needed for that memorandum?
The kind of thing that goes into the memorandum is the name of the decedent, the name of the person that's going to qualify as the executor, the date of the will, and just basic information like that that lets the clerk do their job.
And then the second form you mentioned was the probate tax return. What information would someone need to complete that form?
That sounds like a big, long form, but it's actually a short form in which the person presenting the will is going to list in summary fashion just the total value of the estate that they expect to be administering. And sometimes they just have to estimate it because they don't have all the information yet.
Okay, and then the third thing you mentioned was the list of heirs. That sounds pretty straightforward, but exactly who would be considered an heir and needed to be listed on that form?
All right. That would be the persons who would inherit if the person had died without a will. And the clerk can help you fill out that form if you're not exactly sure of how to fill it out.
Now, does a will have to be admitted to probate? Is that required if you've got the original will of someone who died? And are you required to go to the court to probate it?
You know, that's such an interesting question because sometimes we find that people go to probate and go through this process, then come in to see us, and we look at it and say, gosh, you really didn't need to go through all that. And the reason for that is, and just sort of the simple practical test is, can you get your hands on everything without going through probate? And if everything passed by right of survivorship or by beneficiary designation or pay on death designation, then probate doesn't become necessary. It's probably a better practice to actually file the will with the court, but not to actually qualify a personal representative, just to start timelines running and to make sure that there's no questions.
Now, you just mentioned the word qualify or qualify as a personal representative. So tell us what that means. What is qualification?
Okay, qualification is when you go to the clerk's office and have the court formally appoint you as the executor or administrator of the estate. And in order to do that, you have to be 18 years of age, and you have to be a financially responsible kind of person. The clerk can ask you questions about that. And the person who qualifies is normally the person named in the will when there is a will.
And if a person dies without a will, in other words, intestate, who can or should try to qualify as the personal representative?
Normally, it's going to be the spouse or the people who are named by law as receiving the estate. But there's a statutory provision that gives them a certain period of time to have preference, And then eventually, even a creditor can qualify if the family members haven't done so.
So when someone qualifies as a personal representative, whether they were named as the executor or perhaps an alternate, or they qualify as an administrator if there was no will, I understand that in some cases, maybe most cases, there's a bond required. Can you explain the bond requirement?
A bond is a person's promise and guarantee that they will do things right. And so the clerk will set a bond based on the amount of assets that are going to be administered, usually twice the amount of those assets. And the personal representative will have to sign saying, I agree to be personally responsible for doing things right. Now, that doesn't make them personally liable for the decedent's debts as long as they pay them properly and handle the money properly. What it does make them personally liable for is not handling things correctly.
So am I to understand that the bond is simply a promise to pay? It's not a cash deposit the way we think of like a bail bond or something of that nature. Am I correct about that?
That's correct. Although sometimes it is required that the person have a corporate surety, a bondsman, that guarantees their bond.
And I gather that would probably be for really large estates?
For large estates or for situations maybe where someone is an out-of-state executor or where the will has not waived the surety.
Okay, so after these initial documents are filed and either and the bond is signed for or posted, whatever, what's the next step in the process of administering an estate?
The clerk will give the administrator or executor a certificate of qualification, and that's the paper that they need in order to prove their right to take care of things. And what they need to do then is to begin the process of collecting the assets of the decedent, determining what the debts are, and whether there's enough money to pay all the debts, determining whether there are any allowances that need to go to family members, and taking the proper steps with the Commissioner of Accounts. And that can mean that they have to file an inventory of the estate within 4 months, and then they have to file an accounting for what they've done with the assets after 16 months and every year thereafter.
So you just mentioned the Commissioner of the of Accounts. Could you elaborate on who is the Commissioner of Accounts? What does that person or that office do?
Every court appoints someone to serve to help with the formal administration of estates. So the Commissioner of Accounts is appointed by the circuit court, and that person is who oversees the formal administration, approving the accountings, and they can be a wonderful resource so that if a person handling an estate has questions about the proper procedures, they can check with the Commissioner of Accounts office. And for example, in Henrico, our Commissioner of Accounts has a fabulous website with forms, instructions, and he also gives kind of a monthly seminar for people who have estates to administer.
That sounds like a very useful resource. So you mentioned that an inventory is filed in 4 months and an accounting after 16 months and then an annual accounting. How are the heirs and beneficiaries notified of what's going on in administering an estate?
When someone qualifies on the estate, within 30 days, they have to send a notice to the people who would be interested in the estate. And this gives them the opportunity to protect their rights. And they can request copies of the will and copies of the documents that are going to be involved. Also, they can obtain documents from the clerk of court or from the Commissioner of Accounts office.
And is that notice what's called the notice of probate?
Yes, that's correct.
And does the heir or beneficiary have to do anything in response to that, or can they just simply sit back and wait and see what happens?
They can sit back and wait and see what happens, but if they have any questions, they really ought to sit down with an attorney and determine what their rights are.
You've been listening to the first part of a two-part interview with private attorney Phoebe Hall with Hall & Hall in Midlothian, Virginia, speaking about probate and the administration of estates. The second part of this two-part interview continues next Wednesday, same time, same station. That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Two things are certain, death and taxes, and the complexities of probating an estate make both seem equally complicated. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when private attorney Phoebe Hall takes the fear and mystery out of probate and the administration of estates in the second part of her two-part interview. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbert.